The 11 o'clock hour of Will Dietz House begins at 11:17. Some great clock management by ESPN Wisconsin College Game Day. The offense is running routes on air, so we don't have anything hardcore to talk about here. Elton Jenkins is indeed here in pads. Quay Walker did some individual drill work coming off ankle surgery, so that's an encouraging sign. He's still limited, though, in his level of participation. But I want to, since I listened to you two knuckleheads on my walk down here, can I just say again that I hate what college football is right now, because the Badgers are going to have a hard time getting to bowl eligibility. But like in 1992, when I was a student and my good friend Jason Burns out of Chicago was one of the running backs, and he had a critical fumble in a game against Northwestern that was really tough, that would have, if he'd have held on to the ball, they would have been bowl eligible and won the game, and instead they ended up losing it, and it was really tough for Jace. But they were a team that was building up under a third-year head coach, right? And while Luke Fickell is now doing the same thing, it's in such a different era that it almost doesn't feel, Brad, like you're actually building. It's more you're fishing, and you're just hoping that you catch the right fish to make your team good for this year, and then you got to go back to the lake and go fishing. And it's not the development, and I understand that this is not the world we live in now, so I should just give up on it. But I don't know if I can say that I know what kind of progress they've made or haven't made, because it's a different quarterback every year, right? It'll be another new one next year, right? So how have you kind of navigated being, dare I say, an old school college player, this new era, and how it affects your fandom for your alma mater?
Well, it's a great question, Jason. And, you know, living in extremes, whether it be for life or for college football, is generally not advised. Usually things don't go your way if you're living in extremes. And that's, again, true in life and college football. The problem with the extreme that we're living in college football is so different than the extreme that I lived in, right? Where it was, you know, J.J. Watt went 1 year at Central Michigan and played tight end, and transferred to Wisconsin. And when he transferred, it wasn't an easy process. It was messy. And he had to forfeit an entire year of playing. Now, in that year, he transformed his body, and he already had an attacking, hardworking mindset. But he transformed his body to be partially to what he had become now. But that's so punitive. And I remember being so guarded against anything of value to receive, that it was to the extent where the specialist and I one spring went out to a county golf course. It's $15 for 9 holes walking. And he was like, oh, you guys are the specialists. Just go on. Don't even pay. Your money's no good here. Why don't you just go on and play? And we were like, take our money. You have to. Because any sniffing of anything receiving that goes outside the bounds is going to ding us and get us into trouble. And you compare that now to the lavish lifestyles and money that these guys live and the ease it is to transfer. I think it's a step, because I do think that these guys should be compensated in some degree. And I do think movement is good, but there has to be some level of restriction, because it has gotten to the point of an extreme. In the same way, we all agree that it was an extreme amount of restriction when I was playing. I think we all look at it and say, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I think we can look at this extreme and say, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense either. So I do think it needs to be dialed in. I hope over the next 5 years or so, they're able to do that with something that makes sense, that everybody benefits. But to get to your question, Jason, of how do I see it, and how does it affect my fanhood and my connection with the team? No matter who the coach is, whether it's Coach Fickell or anybody else, it's hard to feel connected to the program. It's hard to get to know anybody. It's hard to know what the tenor or the culture of the team is in any given year. Wisconsin's bread and butter used to be development. They used to get a certain kind of guy sprinkled in with some really high caliber players that maybe you recruited, and you develop them into a Wisconsin football player. Those days are gone. You can't do that anymore. You are going to rent a guy, so to speak. And even if, like you said, you bring in a quarterback who does really well, he's likely going to leave to go to a different team for more money next year. So you're almost damaged by the fact that if you have a guy that plays well. So there needs to be some level of contracts, multi-year commitments, some way of making money make sense and not just coming in for recruiting purposes. So as I look at it as a former player and as a former Badger, and as I talk to other people that are fans and season ticket holders, they're disenchanted with the process. They don't feel connected with the organization. It feels like it's just I know I'm looking at the Wisconsin Badgers on the field, but it's a team and it's an environment I don't even recognize anymore. And it makes me sad, I guess, is the only emotion I can think of, and just hopeful that maybe something will happen down the line, because it's a state of college football that isn't sustainable and it isn't as enjoyable for the consumer as it was even 5 or 10 years ago, in my opinion.
Yeah, to your point, I just always felt like I knew the team so much better. And there would be a guy that would develop into a starter and then break onto the scene and then end up becoming a star, the Leo Chanels and those type guys that I just, you miss that. And I hope that the process that they've gone through the last couple of years brings us closer to that. But again, the unfettered free agency, and you could be a mercenary, it's just wild. I was writing about Sam Brown last night, who is a wide receiver who's here in camp, caught a couple of big plays yesterday from Sean Clifford at the end of practice. He spent 2 years at West Virginia, 2 years at Houston, where he was teammates with Matthew Golden. And then Matthew Golden left to go to Texas, and he left to go to Miami, Florida. And so, the idea of playing for three schools in 5 years is just wild to me, right? And we have to adjust because this is the world we live in. I get it. But it would be nice to feel like, okay, I know this guy and this guy and this guy. And there's a few of those. The Badgers aren't completely devoid of those players, but it is way fewer than what we're accustomed to. And me looking forward to seeing that punter who's really developed into one of the best punters in college football, like one Brad Nortman once did. All right, we're in a special teams period at this end. There's a team run going on at the other end where it looks like it's heavy on run stuff, which makes sense since they're in pads today. But we'll get to more of what goes on here at practice. Plus, we've got Woe Nelly coming up as well. It's all still ahead with Brad Nortman as our cousin sub of the day. It's Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Call Gina Della from Pella today, 855-PELLA-WI, and online at PellaWI.com/radio.
I say, hey, I'll be gone in there, but I'll be back from around the way. It seems like everywhere I go, the more I see, the less I know. But I know one thing, that I love you. I love you, I love you.
So, remember how we started the show talking about the pads coming on and the physical nature of that and how Nate Hobbs maybe was, a little over the line with his physicality? Now, again, I did not see this play. So just to give you an idea of my vantage point, I am at the far end of the field because nobody wants to listen to half of a radio show and not be able to hear the insights of Brad Nortman or Brian Bulaga or Mark Tauscher or Joe Thomas or John Anderson or Alex Strolf, because we got a great stable of cousin subs. But you only hear half of it if you're standing next to me. So I stand down at the far end, so I'm not disturbing people. I can see that Jordan Love is under center right now for a 11-on-11 snap in an 11-on-11 period here, right? He's actually in the shotgun. I stand corrected. But I can't see everything that's going on. I have an obstructed view. He just threw an incomplete pass, however. According to those that are at the other end of the field, Marshawn Lloyd, who was a third-round pick last year, who had the worst fortune of any player as a rookie when it comes to injuries that I have ever covered, He had a hip injury. He had an ankle injury. He had a knee injury. And then when he's finally coming back from the ankle injury, he had an emergency appendectomy that ended his season. He hobbled off a little bit earlier with what appeared to be a leg injury. And according to Rob Domofsky, that it appeared to be Nate Hobbs that hit him. So we've got a guy, Brad, who has dealt with injuries for his entire first year. According to Wes Hodkowitz of Packers.com, Lloyd is still out here at practice, but he is not participating. And so I really hope for his sake that this is not the beginning of another year like last year. Did you ever have teammates like that, Brad, who just never seemed to catch a break health-wise?
Yeah, there were quite a few of them that you would look at and you would say, this guy has everything we would want. Mindset, ability to learn a playbook physically, but you know, the injury bug, as it's so commonly called, can just bite. And the problem is, once this one thing's off, it's likely that something else is overcompensating, which is going to strain that. There's imbalances that occur. So it's unfortunately, whether it be college football, because there were some great recruits that I came in with, that same thing, just couldn't stay healthy. College or pro, you just, some guys' bodies have the misfortune, as you put it, of getting a certain kind of injury. It lingers, imbalances occur. And there are some guys that, on the flip side, they just know how to take a hit. They know how to fall. They know how to angle their body. They somehow just know how to avoid that injury, and with a little bit of luck. So this, going back to what we started talking about, though, Packer fans are going to love Nate Hobbs for his physicality in about a month and a week. But until then, guys are going to be angered by this, because other reports, I'm just trying to piece together too, you know, Zach Tom got in the face of Nate Hobbs. This is day one of practice, and we're talking about already some hits that you don't want to see. And the reason you don't want to see it, the reason that Matt LaFleur was trying to get ahead of this, is because it can hurt the team, right? We love Josh Jacobs, and he is a bell cow, but I'm eager to see what Marshawn Lloyd has. He seems like he has all the gifts to be a special running back and to fit well in the system. And you can't do that if there's an injury or something that occurs that is completely needless when it's a player-on-player type hit. So hopefully this is the last warning that Nate Hobbs has. But from my experience, when a guy has a mentality like this, it's really hard for him to switch it off. So Matt LaFleur, Jeff Hafley, good luck trying to figure out a way to cool Hobbs down as you try to ramp up into intensity of practice.
Yeah, and in fairness to Nate Hobbs, I did not see the play, so I don't know if his hit was questionable or not. We'll find out when I talk to some of my colleagues, one, but two, when we get to locker room and we talk to some people. But bottom line, did we learn nothing from the cast of High School Musical? We're all in this together. All right, we need to get to Woe Nelly. We'll have more updates as practice rolls on.
I didn't know you had a High School Musical reference in you there.
Oh, I love High
How
School
about
Musical.
That? I did not see that coming.
I always wanted to, if I had had a different childhood, maybe I could have been like Zac Efron, you know, both in the musical and playing sports. Although, you know, he was the star of the team, and I don't think I would have been that. But be that as it may,
a little full of himself.
I don't think that's fair. I thought he was a really good teammate from what I could see on the basketball
court. No, Zac Efron's a little full of himself.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you were Zac Efron, you'd be full of yourself too, because you're full of yourself now and you're just Jesse Nelson.
That's true. Takes one to know one. Yeah.
Indeed. All right. We've got more from practice. Woe Nelly's next. It's Wildy and Tausch.
This is Wildy and Tausch, driven by Zimbrick Chevrolet in Sun Prairie on 100.5 ESPN. See their full inventory at ZimbrickChevrolet.com.
Start walking. Don't ever see it sober. If I'm breathing,
got some 11 on 11 down at my end of the field now. It is not the one that's, it is the, well, it's the three quarterbacks that aren't named Jordan Love and a bunch of guys that are keeping the dream alive, including Sam Brown, who I want to talk about a little bit more before we run out of show. But before that, it's time for Wonelli.
If the topic is good, the guys discuss.
Just the other morning, I had breakfast at Tracy Rocker's house. His mama brought out 15 flapjacks. He said, mama, take back 5 of them flapjacks. I gotta stay hungry for the Crimson Tide.
But if it's not, the show must go on. It's time for...
Whoa, Nelly!
On Wildy and Tausch.
All right, as always during this time of the year, Jason, if anything relevant happens during Whoa, Nelly, please feel free to interrupt. I will not be offended, and I know you would anyway.
Okay.
Whoa,
I don't know. I don't know about that. I will not be offended. Part that's you'll try not to be offended, but you might
true.
Still be a little offended.
Maybe it depends what we're talking about. So I did watch on Friday evening the alumni home run derby at American Ooh. Family Field, celebrating the 25th anniversary of the stadium. Ryan Braun, Prince Fielder, Keon Broxton was the winner. Corey Hart. Even some of the other guys that didn't participate in the home run derby. George Kataris was the catcher for the home run derby. Ed Cedar, the old first base coach, was the pitcher for the home run derby. Giovanni Gallardo, very gray beard for Giovanni Gallardo. He was looking a little old, but it was really cool to see a lot of the guys that I was, you know, closest with cheering on the teams from like 2008 to 2014. And then some back in celebrating American Family Field. Wish the Brewers would have got a win leading into the contest afterward, but I thought across the board, the Brewers did a fantastic job bringing everyone back, and the party was on Friday, and it looked like the fans who were in attendance at the stadium had an absolute blast. Did either of you guys catch much of the alumni home run derby or the festivities that ensued on Friday and really carried over all weekend long, Brad?
I did not see it live. I saw a lot of clips on social media after the fact, and I loved it. I thought it was an absolutely brilliant marketing move. There's something about seeing their like batting stances. It just took me back. You know, it just like those guys like Fielder and Braun, Giovanni Gallardo. I even saw like JJ Hardy in the scrum of it celebrating. These are guys that. You know, I grew up loving the Brewers, but there wasn't a whole lot to root for in the 90s and early 2000s. These are the guys that really took fanhood to a next level. You've got real deep memories of watching. So just to see them back all together, it brought back all the feels. And you have to give credit to those guys for helping create the Brewers as they are today. A winning franchise, consistent, high expectations. You don't have this team today without those teams back then. And I'm just thankful that I got to be a big fan of the team as that building process occurred. And it was just so good. It was like seeing old friends again is what it was like. So I thought it was beautiful.
Well, first of all, Jesse, thanks for explaining why Giovanni Gallardo was there. Because when I saw the initial news of this event, I was super confused. Like, was Giovanni Gallardo that good of a hitting pitcher that he was taking part in the home run derby?
I mean, he was, and he did.
He was. Yeah. I know he did, actually, but still probably not good enough as you would put him in a home run derby. The second thing is, I thought it was great, and I didn't watch it live either. Like Brad, I saw the clips. You know, the other thing I wanted, though? I wanted an old-timers game. I always enjoy those. They used to do during like the All-Star weekend back in the 70s and 80s, which I know is long before either of you came along. But like, you know, Ted Williams would be hitting off of Warren Spahn. And yes, the pitches would be, you know, lobbed in there like batting practice. But I'm, as Matt Carney sings, drowning in nostalgia. I love that kind of nostalgic stuff. And so this was good. But this was not my era. I was disappointed that, you know, Gorman Thomas wasn't able to limp out there and hit a few out of the park. Rob Deer, Robin Yount, Ben Oglavy, those type of guys.
Whoa, Nelly!
I will say, just real quick, baseball is one of the few sports you actually pull something like this off. If we tried to, you know, resurface the 90s Packers team You just can't do it, right? It doesn't look the same. It's not possible. So baseball is one of the few sports you can actually do this with. So kudos to the Brewers for making it happen.
Can't wait till the Bucks reunite that 2021 NBA Finals team and they have a 25th anniversary. And
for a dunk contest?
Play a little 3-on-3 or, yeah, have a dunk contest. Yeah. That'd be fun.
Whoa, 3-point shooting Nelly competition.
So the Brewers did drop 2 out of 3 over the weekend to the Miami Marlins. They enter tonight's game against the Chicago Cubs, matching best records in the National League, tied for first place in the NL Central standings. We talked about it at the top of the show. Brad, for those who missed it, or if there's anything else that's ensued since. Huge game. Brewers-Cubs, first of a 3-game set at American Family Field. The last 3 that the two teams will play in Milwaukee in the regular season in 2025.
I mean, this is a critical series. Looking at it, whoever comes away with, you know, a big, maybe if there's a sweep or not, whether it be this series or the series in a couple weeks, those are going to be critical games to do full game leads in front of the other team, because whether it be the Cubs or the Brewers, they're hard to beat and they're going to be hard to catch for whoever loses out on the final 8 games between the Cubs and the Brewers, if there's any lopsided nature of how those games go. So these are critical. Cubs-Brewers, always a big deal. But you got Mizorowski on the mound with Peralta and Priester. You're going against the Cubs' best pitchers of their rotation. So it's going to be fireworks. It's going to be, yeah, that's right. It's going to be awesome. And, you know, to see this team grow from what was early headlines of torpedo bats and basically not having enough pitchers to take the mound to now being a team that has an abundance of wealth at the pitching position and, you know, tied for best record in the NL. Just goes to show long seasons, and this is where it really starts to matter even more so down the line. So I'm stoked. I can't wait to watch tonight.
Jason, you going to be dialed in tonight?
Maybe. I might put it on while I'm writing tonight instead of Law & Order reruns. I will say this. I'm a little bit nervous because, you know, they've been such a great story, and they've won so many. They lost 2 in a row to the Marlins before the walk-off yesterday, right?
Yep.
I'm a little nervous that they're going to have at some point a regression to the mean. And I'm not saying that they're not going to be a playoff team or those, but you know, when you have a streak like that, like they had 11 in a row, it feels like there's sometimes a market correction and you hit a little bit of a rough patch. Hopefully whenever that hits, it's not too damaging, and then they move past it and get hot again. So I don't know when that's going to be, but 162 games, man. Like, we're sitting here talking about 18-game schedule for the NFL. 162 games. God, that's a lot. There's a lot that can go on over that span, and hopefully things just keep going as well as they have been for that club.
Whoa, Nelly!
Did want to share this stat that I heard yesterday. The Brewers, with their comeback win against the Marlins yesterday, avoided a sweep at American Family Field, which continues their streak now lasting more than 2 seasons since last swept at home at American Family Field. The last team to do so does not exist anymore. The Oakland Athletics.
Oh, wow.
When Tausch and I and Dunzo all pronounced the 2023 season dead, when the Oakland Athletics did it in June of 23, that is the last time the Brewers were swept in a 3-game series or more at American Family Field.
And did you learn your lesson from that, Jesse? Like, our show that day, it is still burned into my brain.
Yeah.
How the two of you and your little clown boy just wrote off the rest of the year. And I love the revisionist history now, too, right? Like we brought Dunzo out of the bullpen. You crushed him for getting swept by the Athletics. And now, like, when we retell that story, you two claim, oh, no, we were just saying, you know, they were Dunzo. They weren't going to win the World Series. We weren't saying they weren't making the playoffs, which is a bald-faced lie. You canceled the rest of the season. When Dunzo comes out of the bullpen, that is what you have done. So you two, I know Tausch isn't here, so I'm screaming at the wind, but you two need to own the fact that you wrote off that team. They've been, again, it's you guys, whether it was you with calling for Pat Murphy's job or what you did then. Great job, because you've managed to bring them all kinds of success as you've done it.
Yeah, that was the spark they needed in 23, the Pablo birthday bash conversation about Pat Murphy. This is the spark the 25 team needed. I think they listen. I pick my spots accordingly, Jason. I think that's what we've learned here on Wildy and Tausch the last few years.
Yeah, I just don't know why you guys have to be the way you are. But I love you anyway, and we look forward to Tausch's return next week from his summer sabbatical. But man, are we lucky to have such great cousin subs, including Brad Nortman. All right, Brad Nortman has one more segment with us, but he's got three more hours of radio with those knuckleheads this afternoon, live from Pottawatomie with the KBN crew. Tune in. Great show. I believe I appear on that program on Mondays. So especially a good show around 3:15. But we will roll on, wrap things up here as the Packers continue their special teams period. Brad would be right in his element watching Daniel Whelan swing away. It's Wildy and Tausch.
We're on the Packers.
There's a lot of guys that have shown they've belonged.
Because we're on Wisconsin sports.
I don't know if they've shown that they have staying power and that they're really, really good.
Nobody covers the green and gold like 100.5 ESPN.
Wrapping up Wildy and Tausch with Brad Nortman as our cousin sub of the day. The two-spotting of 11-on-11 continues, and I'm at the non-starters end of the field, which is where I belong. Because I know that what Love does and what all those guys do down at that end is important, no doubt about it. But man, Brad, I love rooting for the underdog. Sam Brown yesterday with a couple of big catches at the end. You know, he was just the guy that we knew was teammates with Matthew Golden, and he's in a crowded wide receiver room. I don't like his chances, but he's wearing number 17, just like his idol Davante Adams did, totally by happenstance. That's the kind of stuff that makes the NFL special, is when guys like that get some opportunities, and hopefully it leads to something like that. I'm sure you were that way as a teammate as well, rooting for the underdog.
Oh yeah, easy to root for the underdogs. Love seeing those stories come to fruition, and it's makes the game of football and the NFL beautiful.
Yeah, it's a really remarkable aspect of training camp, and we'll see who those feel-good stories are as training camp rolls on. All right, that's it for us today. Thanks to Brad for being our cousin sub of the day, and thanks to you for coming along for the ride with us. Have a great day. Take care. Be good.
Miss any of today's episode of Wildy and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin? Commercial-free full-show podcasts are available free on the ESPN Wisconsin app.